Mackenzie.
Lamar.
Well done.
Was gonna say, I think I got it. I think I got it.
Speaking of getting it, if you could catch any STD, no, that's not our that's not our
My
warm-up
God, I literally
question.
almost spit out my drink.
Not the warm-up question today. Rather than going down that route, you got any? I feel like this is a movie about the most awkward hookup of all time. You got any awkward hookup stories?
Gosh, okay. I mean,
We're gonna get real weird.
we're gonna get real weird, guys. Feel free to fast forward. So, one that I don't think is awkward that I think is kind of funny is I had this one night out with my girlfriends after my divorce. And it was months later. Like, I was great. I was very, listen, after I was divorced, I was living my best life. It was great. And
I was
so
going
it
to
was
say, I'm
out.
excited because it's at this point in the story, there's only girls involved. So I'm
There's
curious to see
only
where this
girls
goes.
involved. No, there's only girls involved so far. No, I'm just kidding. We're out with our girlfriends. We were at this bar downtown, and I was just getting back out there. I was not dating, like, seriously. I was just like ready to, fuck around and find out. Anyway, so there was this one guy from across the bar, I remember, and we just had this vibe. I mean, I'm sure you guys have experienced this. You see someone across the bar, you're like, this is gonna be a thing, right? And so it was a thing, and my girlfriend who had invited me out, she didn't know him, so she was super creeped out by this ongoing whatever thing. She kept trying to pull me away from him, I remember. And I was like, I don't know why you're doing that. Like, this is, I'm feeling this. And so anyway, he could tell I was feeling this. And I remember he walked up. I was sitting down in this like center round thing. He walked up to the middle of where I was talking to my girlfriends. He picked me up from my lower back, like just picked me up and kissed me in front of everybody. And
Before
just
any
like,
conversation was even
no, we
had.
had chatted. We had chatted
Okay.
a little bit, but I just mean like she kept pulling me away from him. And we were like not finishing the conversation. We were pulling, whatever. And then he just was like, fuck it. And just
He's like,
walked right
shoot a
up the
shot.
middle and just shot the shit out of his shot. And it was great, by the way. But my girlfriend is still just like, what the fuck is happening? And I'm not this kind of person. As far as she knows, she's like, what the fuck are you doing? This guy is being weird. Maybe you're drunk. I wasn't drunk, by the way. And so I was like, I'm kind of into it, to be honest. That was hot as fuck. And so, but anyway, she separates us. And I actually lose him. And when I tell you your girl was gonna go home with this man for 100% certainty, like I do not feel any shame about this. It was
This
hot.
feels
There were
more like
vibes.
less like an awkward hookup and more like one of those
I
Craigslist
know I should have done that because I literally, all this to say, the moral of the story that I wanted to share is you regret the things you don't do, I think, more than the things you do do, because I have regretted to this day that I did not hook up with that man because I lost him. And I was like, this would have been great. I'm pretty sure that would have been awesome. So yeah, not awkward so much as it like didn't happen. It was like I wanted it to happen and it didn't happen. And that was a bummer.
I'm sure there are some folks out there, though, who would say the opposite, and they're like, "Oh no, I definitely regret this one hookup more than anything I never did." But what's your second one?
Well, my awkward one isn't this is so TMI, but whatever, we're fucking here. My first uncircumcised penis. That
Freaked you
was
out.
like
You were
that
like,
was
"Oh,
an
this is like a
alarming moment for
whole
me. I mean, I knew what
event."
it was, but I hadn't
Yeah.
seen one, you know what I
Yeah.
mean? And so it was like, whoa, this is, and it did kind of slow things down because I was so alarmed for a hot second, like not alarmed, but just distracted. And so I feel like I got out of the zone and I kind of fucked it up a little bit because I was very, very distracted for a minute or two.
I'm
And
imagining you walking to the bathroom by your and formulating a game plan. Like you've got like the marker board and the X's and O's, and you're like,
yeah,
okay,
I was
what do
like,
I
wait a
think
minute.
I'm
Okay, I'm gonna
supposed
just
to do?
rejigger this. And
Yeah.
I feel like also, I mean, not for nothing, I think this guy has that experience a fair amount because he seemed like he was prepared for that. Anyway, that was a pretty awkward moment for me. How about if that's like too TMI, I don't
No,
know. But
I
anyway.
think that's honestly, I'm not going to name names, but it's like other female friends of mine have mentioned that. Like that we're in a culture where it's not the norm. Doesn't mean it's bad, but it's just different and it's
It's not the
surprising.
norm.
So I would say for mine, I'll start with the less awkward of the two. I think I had a girl and we hooked up a few times, but she was at the time more progressive than me sexually, or at least into different things. And she asked me to slap her in the face. that was
oh my God.
Not my thing.
I was going to say, you're probably like, that feels like assault.
I was like, I don't know that I want to do that. And she's like, just do it. Just do it. Heat of the moment. So I gave her like a little, and she was like, no, harder. And I was like, I don't think I can do that.
Yeah.
But fine. And then we just kept doing what we were doing, kept hooking up. And then she slapped the shit out of me. And I was like, I didn't ask for this. I didn't.
Just because you're into it doesn't mean I'm into it. So.
That I think that might have been the last time we hooked up. I was like, yeah, this doesn't feel like it's gonna.
This
gonna
is
go
not
anywhere.
A. This doesn't match. This isn't a good matchup. Like
I had a good cry after she left, and
bruised over here.
Yeah, fine. And the other one, which I'll throw out since you did your more awkward story, is I got rug burn basically in a not great place to get rug burn from a girl who in college who didn't really have much idea of what she was doing, and that just. Everything after that was not pleasant at all. We cut things short because I was just like, I'm injured at this point. I cannot continue. I tap out.
I do think everyone has a sex rug burn story, though.
Really?
I think that's a universal. I have a couple. But I just mean, like, I think everybody has at least one rug burn sex story. So I think that's a rite of passage, actually.
This might be the best cold open we've ever done. I'm just going to come out and say it.
We're going to get the most downloads. People are going to be like, wow, I heard about this cold open. All right. Well, let's get into some more sex shit. Let's be honest.
Hell yeah.
Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And we are continuing Fan Jan with what I feel is a really interesting request. It follows. And yeah, it sure does.
This got mentioned to you a couple times. Like you I forget who it was that had recommended it to you.
Somebody asked to be on this episode, multiple requests for this film, and we'll get into it, but it's pretty well received as a film. Mm-hmm. So people really wanted us to do this one. But had you seen it before?
Oh, yeah, I'd seen. I think this was my third watch. I saw it in theaters and really enjoyed it. We'll get to the things I don't like because there's definitely things that I don't love, but I find it pretty enjoyable. Yeah.
No one will be surprised to hear that I do not. So anyway, while we get there, what are we drinking?
Well, our drink, as always, created by @CraftWorld. Make sure to give him a follow. Thank you, Skylar, as always. This is 2 ounces of whiskey, 1 ounce of strawberry puree, 0.75 ounces of lemon, and 0.5 ounces of agave as the sweetener in there. Just shake it, strain it into a coupe, and if you want, you can do a tahine rim, which I think I did. You did not do the tahine.
I forgot, and I'm so bummed. I almost went and ran and did it, but yeah. Cheers.
I like that little kick. Cheers. And we are calling this The Spread, because I think that's what this movie's all about.
Which we had the longest conversation about naming this cocktail, I think, of any cocktail we've developed for the pod. And there were a lot of great suggestions and runners up. And I wanted to take a pause and share a couple because I thought they were like missed opportunities.
Some of them were too fun for the subject matter of the film. This is not a very sex positive movie. So I think some of them were a little too.
The Fornicator was one.
That was mine. I'm laughing at my own drink, but
that was yours. This is the grossest one, but it was an accidental, supposedly gross one where you suggested It Swallows.
And well, I didn't
see you in all caps. I was like, ew.
I was like, I didn't mean it that way. I meant it's a drink, so we're, you know, it swallows.
But, I know I got it after you said that, but I was like, instinctively, there's no way this doesn't mean that. And I asked Skylar too, and he was like, what does he mean? That's not what he means. And I had to explain that to him because I don't think this is where anybody's head goes about this particular movie. But anyway, it was pretty funny, and I was so grossed out and obviously nixed that one. But some of the others were Creeping Death, Awkward Hookup, and then
which we've discussed in mass at this point.
In mass, and then Down to Frolic, and Panty Dropper. I thought Panty Dropper was too on the nose, but it was a funny submission, I will say.
That was the one where I was just like, that might be a little too playful for
yeah. So anyway, there's all the options for this cocktail if you wanted to name it yourself. But I thought The Spread was the punniest, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it makes sense in multiple ways, and it fits the movie more. I'm good with it.
I like it. It's also very tasty. So again, shout out to Craft World. It's really good. A delicious one. I do need tahine, though. I think I would just say, not having it, I can tell you do need it. A little kick, a little
because it's very sweet. So
it is very sweet. Yeah, and I need a little spice to it.
Yeah,
But anywho, like we said, we're talking about It Follows 2014. This one, it was a 6.8 out of 10 on IMDb. And the critics' reviews on Rotten Tomatoes were wild. 95% critics' reviews and then 66% from audiences, which I felt like checked out a little bit more. But the 95% from critics, I haven't had so many questions when I saw that.
I think it gets a lot of credit for being original as far as horror is concerned. Like, it is a cool concept. No one had really done this exact thing before. I think the execution isn't perfect. And like I said, we'll get into that. I think there's some things to be desired. But I think a lot of that critics thing was just like, oh, it's a really original. Cool concept. Yes, which you don't get a lot of nowadays.
Especially in horror, I think, like we've talked about before, just like, well, I mean, everything, but just it feels very tropey and whatever, you know what's coming, etc. And I will give it that. I think it is different, but some of the other shizzle I don't get. So we'll get through the cast and crew here really quick. Writer and director, David Robert Mitchell, who has done, I actually never saw this, but it had been on my list for a really long time, Under the Silver Lake. Did you ever see it?
I've also heard mixed reviews of that one where some people really love it and some people don't get it and some people fucking hate it. So
yeah,
I haven't seen it, but it's on my list.
It's been on my list. Yeah. Well, we'll report back maybe. He also did The Myth of the American Sleepover. Have you ever seen that? Mm-mm. I don't know. So anyway, this is like the only thing of his I've seen, so I can't tell you anything else about it.
Well, there's supposedly a sequel to this coming out either this year or next, I believe.
Is it They Follow or something like that?
Yes. Yeah. So it should be out, I think, late 2025 or early 2026. We'll see how that goes.
But like how? Why? Anyway, we'll get into it. Major cast crew. Maika Monroe plays our main lead, Jay Height. She's the one being followed for most of this. Mm-hmm. She did... not a lot that you would know. One of the ones that I have actually seen, though, is The Guest. Did you ever see that?
I didn't. How was it?
It was pretty good. It was like a, I'm blanking on his name right now, and I shouldn't because I know him quite well, but he was made famous for Downton Abbey, and then he ended up being the Beast in the live action Beauty and the Beast. And
say X-Men, and I was like, oh, Nicholas Holt.
Nicholas Holt.
He was the Beast.
No, he does. He's Charles Dickens in The Man Who Invented Christmas as well. And just blanking out on him right now. But anyways, this was his first. Like, The Guest was his first turn as like a very different type of character. I thought it really upended his like rom-com-y whatever kind of typecasting. Okay. So it's an interesting watch. I don't even remember her being in it though. She's also in Long Legs, which is kind of newer. It just came out, I think, late 2024.
Still waiting for it to stream free because I still haven't seen it.
I saw it free on something, so I can give you a login. But anyway, I just watched it recently as well but it was very interesting. She looks very different in that one is what I will say.
Did you enjoy? We know you didn't really have a great time with this one. Did you like Long Legs more than this? Because I heard that was also a little bit polarizing.
That's interesting. It's unique.
Okay.
It's also unique. Like, I think you would probably find it interesting for sure. I can't say I would say whether or not you would like it.
Okay.
But Nicolas Cage in it is very the role that he plays is half of why you want to watch it, I think, because of the way he plays it. But she does a good job. It's just a weird topic.
Okay.
But yeah, definitely watch that one. It's worth a watch for sure. Keir Gilchrist plays Paul, who, again, hasn't done a ton of other stuff. It's kind of a funny story is maybe the only other thing he's known for that people might have seen.
He had that Netflix series Atypical, and I meant to watch that too, but never got around to it.
Oh, okay.
He was like the main person in that.
I didn't watch it, but I know why he feels more familiar than anything I've seen him in. Because I was thinking, I feel like I've seen him in something else, and I haven't. I must have seen the trailers. Daniel Zavato is also in this as Greg, which he was just in another creepy movie that I watched as well on Netflix, Woman of the Hour. Have you seen that yet?
I had that. I actually downloaded that for our flight back from New York, but I had other shit to get done, so I didn't end up watching it. But it's Anna Kendrick, right? Being the stalker type thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she directed it as well. It's her directorial debut, but she also stars in it. And it's well done. It is based on a true story and an actual serial killer, so it's pretty creepy. And he plays the creepy guy, spoiler alert. And they make that clear from the trailer, so I didn't give you anything weird. But anyway, Olivia Lucardi is Yara, who I didn't know from anything, but she's apparently known for Money Monster.
She was in Orange is the New Black, but I can't remember her character. And I also, there's a movie, and this is one that is going to be really questionable for some people. It's called Soft and Quiet. I think it was a Netflix original, or maybe it was like an indie film that got onto Netflix. But it is a very uncomfortable movie. Has to do with sort of, it's hard to not ruin it, but I'll just say it's an uncomfortable film. But the cool thing about it is designed to be a one shot. So the entire movie, it's kind of like a 1917 where the whole movie is designed to be a single shot from beginning to end. I don't know if it actually is one shot, but it's very, very good and compelling. But I would say, try not to spoil anything for yourself, but maybe be ready to be uncomfortable for a bit.
Well, I'll give you the summary as a little sidebar. Let's hear it. We can cut it if we want, but because I don't know if it's a spoiler or not. But playing out in real time, an elementary school teacher organizes a mixer of like-minded women when she encounters a woman from her past, leading to a volatile chain of events.
That gives enough away. I would just say, if you've seen American History X, maybe, and that didn't make you totally turn off the movie, but it's kind of cringy and uncomfortable and hateful and very negative,
then maybe
you should watch it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Interesting. I'm now intrigued. All right. Lily Seppi, who plays Kelly Height, and she's known from The Intruder. So she's the sister. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see The Intruder, but that's what she's most well known for. And then finally, Jake Weary, who plays Hugh/Jeff, we find out. And I haven't seen him in anything, but the one that stood out to me is he's in How to Blow Up a Pipeline, of all things. Okay.
In a documentary.
I both do and do not want to know. You know what I mean? So whatever. But speaking of plot summaries, this one is also very simple. A young woman is followed by an unknown supernatural force after a sexual encounter. That's also kind of an anticlimactic sexual encounter, if you ask me. I was like, this was not worth all of this, if you ask my personal review.
Yeah, this was her first time. She was kind of saving herself. And
it was in a car. Anyway, okay. So, however, despite my feelings about this particular movie, it did pretty well. I mean, it's well-reviewed, mm-hmm. like we said, but it had a budget of $1.3 million, very low budget, which didn't make sense from the production value. I mean, like, not bad value. I just mean where they're shooting, and it's very simply shot. And the box office was $23.3 million. So, I mean, not bad for... I feel like it was kind of an indie horror at the time, too. That's how a fair number of people referred to it. So I think that's part of, you know, this made a lot of a splash for an indie horror type of movie, I think is probably fair to say. And it premiered at Cannes, which I think is interesting, too, because that means, I mean, for those of you who don't know how film festivals work, especially very prestigious ones like Cannes, you have to submit your film for consideration to be accepted into the film festival before it's ever shown. And if you're an established director, producer, writer, etc., then you probably have an edge, even if the work itself is not as strong as the typical entries for that festival. But this is not a guy who had a ton of edge, right? He didn't have a ton of work prior to this. He didn't have a big repertoire to reference and a bunch of hits before this to be able to get him there. And it was accepted. So for me, that in and of itself, like, said a lot about people, like, to your point, did really think this was different or was compelling enough to put it at such a prestigious festival. But I also feel like because it premiered there, it got a lot more credit than I personally think made sense for the actual entirety of the film. You know,
I think that happens a fair amount. You see a movie and they show the palms and it's like, look, we did this thing at Cannes, and then you watch it and you're like, well, this is just a kind of schlocky indie film. That happens sometimes.
And I think also international films are really, like, not guilty of this, but I think for a Western audience, when you watch an international film, it's very often that you're like, I do not fucking get this, because there's just some significant cultural differences. I think sometimes I watch a lot of international films and I still really struggle with some of them. I had one in particular that my girlfriend and I went and saw, and we were like, we walked out and we're like, we're too American for this. Like, we don't know what the fuck just happened. It was so terrible, and it had great reviews. You know what I mean? So
I watched
it does depend on context, I think, as well.
That movie that Australian guy directed, The Passion of the Christ, that one was fucking rough. I was like, what's the point of this? What's the message?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, that one. Really not interesting at all. Who cares about that one? Not an integral story for people. No, there are, but there are ones like that too, that are like, even if the story is important and it's hard to watch, you're like, why did we do this? Why did I spend 2 hours of my life on this? It's pretty rough. But
I was going to say, on the positive side, another movie that came out, I think last year, that was at Cannes was Talk to Me. And that was another horror movie with kind of an original premise. Pretty cool. And it was the twin brothers. I can't remember their last name, but that was their first film. And they used Cannes as sort of their outlet to get a distributor for it. Somebody bought up the rights to the film, and that one ended up being another hit. So I think it's a good Cannes, surprisingly, considering like the Oscars and other places sort of shun horror as a genre. It's cool that some of these film festivals can get financing for these lesser known films.
Danny and Michael Philippou?
The Philippou brothers.
I never saw it, so I don't know.
You should. But it's very, very good. They started with a YouTube channel and they called Raka Raka that was kind of silly, but very fun. And then they just parlayed that into making movies.
Yeah, and I think like you cannot love the subject matter or think it's really heavy or hard with, you know, international films, indie films, film festival-y type films that are non-blockbuster films, I should say, and still respect aspects of it and say, like, this part of the filmmaking process is really well done, you know? And like we said here, I think that the concept is quite original and I will definitely give it that. But it doesn't always follow, not pun intended, that you're going to love the film itself. So anyway, but all that to say, if you haven't seen it, this is a bit more recent. This is a 2014 film, like we said. So if you haven't seen it, turn around, don't drown. It's spoiler time.
Hell yes. And one thing I wanted to add to sort of the cast and crew piece was, I think it's hard to talk about this movie without mentioning the score, which is done by Disaster Piece. He also did Bodies, 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 which has an incredible score as well and is another fun, newer horror movie. And funny enough, he also scored Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, the Oscar winner.
Love that movie. Have you seen it?
I have. I watched it at like twice, I think.
Yeah. It's so good. And if you haven't seen the precursor to it, all the little YouTube shorts of it, go back and watch those as well. You don't need to see them to watch the movie, but they're so enjoyable. I don't know. It just like warms your heart a little bit.
Jenny Slate in there. She's adorable. And like the voice is
great. She plays a little boy Shell, in theory, but she does a beautiful job at his voice. And the story is like, I teared up in that shit. It was cute. Same. And it was very sweet, very cute. Anyway, side plug for movie that I think is so great.
All that to say, Disaster Piece, aka Richard Vreeland, I think he's going to be going places as far as composer. We always have sort of the same handful of composers in cinema, it feels like. You got your Hans Zimmers and your John Williams and whatnot. So I feel like this guy's going to do things. I like that he always tends to lean synth heavy, like more electronic, and he's doing these horror films. So I think he's got big things in the future.
Yeah, I will say this isn't one that I like super registered the score, but I do also think there were moments where the score complemented the scene. I did note that a couple, like it wasn't one that the whole time I was like, oh my God, this music is so good. I don't mean that, but there were moments where I was like, this does really go with this moment, you know, really well. So, but the high level concept is that, again, this starts from a hookup and you see this just like very typical teenage relationship or seemingly like late teens, early college. I mean, they're not in high school, they're early college something. And, you know, this is a young woman who is holding out, you think, for a special experience and then ends up having sex in a car with this guy. And it's after something, what I think is interesting personally, is that it is after this creepy experience at a theater, right? Like you get this all lead up of she likes him, her sister likes him, like people think he seems like a charming guy. They go on this date, seemingly romantic. They're playing this fun game as they go into the theater. They're really like showing that they have actual chemistry. And you get the impression that he does really like her. But then he has this creepy experience where he sees something she doesn't see. And this is the thing that, you know, again, spoiler alert, is following him. And he wants to leave immediately. And I do think it's an interesting start. Like, I think it's an interesting jump start to the movie and how it kicks off. I think, like, in real life, you would be like, what the fuck? We just got here. Like, why are we leaving? And not only that, why are we leaving to do something else? We're not going to just like watch this movie. We're going to go do something else. He said he didn't feel well, for example. It's like, why don't you just go home? But instead he takes her they go out basically parking and they hook up in a car. And it feels like not what she wants, also maybe not what he wants, you know, but also seems planned because he chloroforms her. Like, this takes planning. You have to have chloroform on hand. This is not a typical fucking chemical that you have in your back pocket. And he's ready to chloroform someone to do this, to pass this on. And that is not a great start for me. Like, that's very hard for me to wrap my brain around, because it's like the it's interesting because the juxtaposition of this encounter is consensual, and they make a point to say that later. She does agree to this, but that part isn't. So it still feels like such a violation. And the whole encounter is then tainted to me by this violation, because you know what his intent was.
Yeah.
His intent was to pass it on. Right. And yeah. You get why. I'm not saying it. It's very complicated. You understand why, but that whole like kickstart is a really like, even that is hard for me to get past.
I mean, I think it's intentional. I think that it is made to make you feel uncomfortable and you have that moment where she's hanging her hand out of the car after they've slept together. She doesn't regret it at that point at all. She feels happy and she's touching the flower.
She's like being nostalgic a little
really
bit.
Really pretty overhead shot of like her hand hanging out of the car and stroking the flower outside. And it's quickly broken of like, oh, he's chloroforming her. What the fuck is happening? And it's also he can put her in the tire up and basically explain the situation, because otherwise she might not believe him. And my theory is we sort of skipped over the opening of the girl who is being stalked already the thing.
You're right.
And I picked up, this was my, like I said, my third watch. I like that she runs out of the house in the first shot and then kind of does a lap around the road and then goes back into the house. But at this point, we can't see the creature.
And you don't know why.
Yeah. So then it makes a lot more sense on rewatch of, oh, she's like out running it to get a little bit of distance and then runs
away.
Also,
ladies, she's running in heels. Okay. Nothing good is happening when a woman is running in heels. Shit has gone awry. Okay. Things are going wrong. So it's not, oh, I'm just looking at this empty house and I'm running in heels voluntarily. It does totally make sense that something evil and creepy is following her, because otherwise this bitch would not be running in those shoes.
110%. She would have put on her Skechers or her New Balances, you know, if
and
she
not
had
been like night clothes, you know, like it was
that
an
whole,
interesting
that
look.
Whole opening is really interesting. I love when she gets to the beach and she there's that shot where she's talking on the phone to her dad and like apologizing for all these things, and then there's later in the
really
film they
gruesome.
Do a that death is brutal with the leg bent backward.
I like that you don't see it, but then you see the result, you know, and the result is, very gruesome.
But that shot, there's four or five shots in this where they're kind of just sitting on a still frame. So when her car has the headlights aimed at her on the beach and you're just looking and you don't see anything, but she sees something, that pays off later, because they do four or five of those shots where you're looking at nothing, a still frame, and then later something actually approaches the camera. But all that to say, my theory is that Jeff, whatever his fucking name is, I think that might have been an ex of his, either a girlfriend or that might have been someone else he hooked up with. And that's who we're seeing die at the beginning. So that's why he is so desperate of like, this shit is real. It's happening. I just got somebody killed. I need to pass this to someone else. So I go ahead.
But I have to pause you right there, because to me, that is a fundamental problem with this movie, for me at least, of he doesn't know exactly where this came from. He says that to her when he passes it on to her and is trying to explain this to her. And he says, I think it's this girl I hooked up with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we assume that that girl who just died is the one, because now it's coming for him, right? That's why he's freaking out. But he doesn't know. Like, it is not at all made clear that she has given him this spiel. And that he knows the ins and outs of this, because he says it very unsure when he tells her, like, I think it was this girl I hooked up with. It doesn't really matter. He kind of gets like blows past that. And I'm like, how do you know the details of this? How do you know that it's walking towards you incessantly? How do you know, like, that to me?
Well, one thing is based on the way that the creature operates, it's the last person who got infected, quote unquote, is the one that's being stalked. Like, it only stalks one person at a time, right? So that girl who dies on the beach is not the one that gave it to him. It's the other way around. He gave it to her. she got killed, so now it's coming back for him.
Okay.
So I don't, I think he
But he also, how does he know all the ins and outs? So I guess that's how he's figured it out, maybe?
Yes, he's like seen that people die from it, back and again. It's like, I'm constantly being stalked, and this girl who I had sex with just got slaughtered on a beach, so he knows that's what's going to happen to him if it catches him.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe. We don't get a lot of details on this girl in the bar. Did she tell him any of this, or is he just figuring out on his own? Yeah. I think it's vague for a reason. Like, I think sometimes there's a risk. No, but you're right.
I flipped those two people because that's where I was like, this doesn't make sense. But yeah, again, this is my first watch personally, so that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fair. Third watch, I think I caught more things. And I think there's a risk in horror movies, especially of over-explaining things sometimes when you know everything about a creature. It's like, Jaws is scary because you don't part see the thing for 90% of the movie, you know? So right.
You're supposed to be confused or trying to figure it out or what have you. Yeah. Well, and but what I think was interesting about him with her is that, again, it seems like he likes her, and there is an implication, I think, which makes what you just explained make a lot more sense. There is an implication that they have been seeing each other, kind of, you know, they like each other. He genuinely likes her. They've been spending time together, and that this is a desperation move. Like, this is, he's going to die if he, in his view, he's going to die if he doesn't have sex with her and pass it to her. And he probably deeply regrets it because he seems to actually like her. But there are a couple dots there that I think would take a while for me to connect, because again, he's operating under an assumed name, but they've also been spending time together. And, you know, there's just some stuff like that where I'm like, I don't know if it totally follows for me. Again, not pun intended.
You keep saying that. I think it's intentional at this point.
It has like permeated my brain, I think, for sure. But anyway, I get what you're saying, where it does help that make a little bit more sense. But it's an interesting kickoff nonetheless. I mean, you have this gruesome scene, the way that it's shot and all those scenes, as you mentioned, is very interesting. I do like, again, the above head shot that you mentioned with her hand. The thing that is also interesting to me is you see pretty immediately how the thing that is following you changes form.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. And I think that's interesting too.
What was, of all of those, which form did you find the creepiest or most unsettling? Cause there's a lot of strange looking fuckers that thing takes the form of.
Yeah. Well, let's quickly recap. So the first one is the naked woman, just calmly walking. Mm-hmm. Then we have the girl the in woman. The house. Oh yeah. The old woman also with like a knee brace or whatever, elderly woman with like a knee or ankle brace, whatever. And she's again, very calm, just no real face. And most of them aren't really making a face, but then you also have the girl in the kitchen in the house who is like partially undressed and wetting herself
mouth
and
is bleeding, missing teeth.
And there's a lot of nakedness for like seemingly no reason, but it's also only the women, which I think is like, really? Because
there's a naked dude on the roof.
That's right. Yeah. But the first two other guys are not, you know, so you're like, why are you just showing stuff? And also the dick is like very much in shadow, so you're not really seeing
You wanted to see a dick.
I always want to see a dick, if only for equality purposes. You know what I mean? Fair. If I'm gonna see boobs, we better see a dick. That's all I'm saying. But yeah, so anyway, she's, you know, urinating on herself, whatever. And then there's the young boy.
It's the only time we use that transition on this podcast. So anyway, she's urinating on herself.
She's urinating on herself. It's totally fine. This is a very normal conversation, obviously. The boy at the shack that like kind of does, he's the only one who does like a really intimidating scream, which is interesting. Yeah. The really super tall guy.
A lot of people are freaked out by that one. The tall guy coming into the bedroom after I think Yara enters the room.
I think it's
the
dip in the darkness. Yeah, that's
and that's a real guy. That's it. I think he's in the Guinness Book as like the tallest twins in the world. He's 7'6" or something crazy.
7 foot something. Yeah. No, I mean, he is creepy for sure. And then there's the girl who's walking on the beach as well, who like, again, just doesn't seem, she's the only one up to that point, at least, who makes physical contact with her, and she just pulls her hair up, which feels like a weird.
That's the one though that looks like Yara, because there's that. I don't know if you picked up on that, but when you're looking at them, it's framed very specifically to show her approaching in the background, and you think it's just Yara,
but
then you see
her
floating in the water. That's a great reveal, and you're like, oh fuck, they have no idea. Yeah,
but see, I didn't think that was a great reveal, because maybe this is good or bad, because good or bad thing about the performers when they're walking, the walking motion, like to me, I felt like I could read every single one that was following them. Where I was like, again, the ones that look like Yara, the ones that are maybe like in a crowd, whatever. Every single time somebody was following them, I was like, it's that one. It's that one. It's that one. Like at the school where you see that one girl in the white jacket. The first time you see her, you don't know that it's following them. The second time you see her, you know that it's following them. But as soon as I saw her, I was like, that's her. It's something about the way that they shoot them and the way that they're moving. And I will give credit to the actors, perhaps, of they're all taking the same like posture or cadence in their walk, that their gait is similar enough that you're like, that's the one, at least for me. And so as soon as I saw Yara on the beach, I was like, that's the thing following her.
I think a rewatch might do some good on that, just to, because I don't think that everyone who's walking in that way in the movie is the actual entity. I think that's intentional from the director of, he shows things in the background. For example, just looking at the closing scene when they're walking on the sidewalk hand in hand and there's somebody walking behind them with that same gait. Do we think that's the demon? Probably not, because he just slept with like three women or whatever. But I think that there's very intentional shots where they do show people in the background approaching. And you're not supposed to be sure, is this the creature or am I just being paranoid that there's something approaching in the background?
The only one that I questioned, though, was that last one, is what I'm saying. Mm. Like every other one, I ended up being right about the thing that was following them. And so that's where I don't know what it is, but it was like, maybe it's the way that it's shot. I don't know. But there was something there where I was like, yeah, this feels. And that is also, by the way, guys, this is why I struggle with horror in general, is like I find horror very predictable personally. And it loses me quickly for that reason. And so this is one of those where I was like, okay, yeah, it's that one. Great. Like run away, you know, whatever. And I also felt like we were stuck to some kind of radius here where, yes, you have to get. They talk about like drive far away, give yourself time to think, like whatever. And I feel like she could go so much farther. You know what I mean? Like nothing's stopping her from going way farther to really stall or sleep with 27 guys. Who knows? Like whatever. And by the way, I counted. This woman has slept with 6 men in 3 days. This is fucking wild. You know, she's committed to the bit. Like she'll do it, you know? So
do you think that she did sleep with all the guys on that raft?
There's 3 for sure. Yeah, that's the debate, right? So there's 3 for sure that she slept with, and then there's 3 questionable. I don't know why she goes into the water and she comes out wet if she didn't.
And she's crying in the car, but I don't know if that's her crying because she's getting people killed, or that's because if it is that she slept with all 3 of them, then this demon works fucking fast, unless all 3 of these dudes are sharing a studio apartment.
She did it, and then
apartment.
She didn't explain it to them, and I think that's why she's crying. That was my read of like, I feel so bad. I'm literally stalling for my own life by putting these people at risk, and I'm not explaining it to them. I'm just hitting it and quitting it, you know? And I think she feels really guilty.
That's the thing.
But
if you
she thinks it's going to buy her some time.
If you explain it, then you buy yourself more time. But I guess it's a matter of, do they believe you? Because Greg doesn't believe her, and that's why
she doesn't have I think at that moment, in that specific context, she doesn't have a great way, because they're out on the water. Again, you've shown like this thing can't walk on water or in the water necessarily. But so like, I don't think she has a great way to prove it in that moment. She just has to exit the situation. Mm-hmm. And so it makes sense that to me that she has, but I mean, it could go either way, but I could see you making the argument that, yeah, she did, to stall a little bit for time. But again, like, go further. Fuck more guys. Apparently you give 0 fucks about STDs because she's just ready to go, you know? She's like,
I disagree.
She puts Paul at risk. She does all these things.
I disagree. I think the point of the movie is that it's very important that this was a character who had not had sex up until this point, and now she's fucking traumatized. To the point where, like, Paul is, we could talk for 20 fucking minutes about Paul and whether he's a fucking weirdo or friend zone weirdo who's trying to get out of it, because he is just like every opportunity when they're like,
he just
like,
wants to fuck her. I mean,
yeah,
this
there's
is a guy
that scene in the car where
it's
he's
so
pretending
weird.
To sleep, or he's got his eyes closed and the girls are talking and they say, have you thought about passing it on? And Paul like perks up and he's like, please say yes, please say yes, please say
but
yes.
But that's like, I guess that's the thing. Like, I don't understand the moral of this fucking story, because this seems like a pro sex movie to me, where everybody in here is like, I just want to have sex. No matter what, it doesn't matter what the risk is. I have to have sex with this person, or I want to do this. And I don't get trauma read from her at all, at least about the sex. Like, I don't
disagree.
I don't read that.
I think
at all
there's
from
that
her.
Shot after the initial interaction or initial intercourse is the word I was looking for, where he explains the whole situation. She's terrified of seeing this thing stalking her. And then when she's back at her house, there's that scene where she's looking in the mirror and she looks into her underwear at mm-hmm. what we don't know, because it's not like, unless this thing shows in some way, but then there's the jump scare that knocks us out of it. But I feel like she is traumatized. She's like, what the fuck did I do? And I think this is the rest of the movie is her coming to grips of like, is sex a bad thing? Is every time that I do this? And I think it is a bigger metaphor of just women in general feeling devalued when they have sex, and she's having to kind of push her. So she doesn't want to pass it on. It takes these terrifying encounters for her to get to agree to have this awkward hookup in a hospital, which don't recommend, smells terrible. You don't want to have sex in a hospital. But she does this with Greg just because she feels like she's out of options. She's been like assaulted multiple times and this thing is stalking her. So I don't think it's her sleeping around. I think she's having to convince herself, and it's kind of like all these men around her that want to fuck her.
She's a hoe, by the way.
Yeah, but it's all these guys around her that want to fuck her, but like she doesn't want to. And it's kind of this like age old tale of like men telling you whatever you want to hear, whether it's a fucking psycho curse or not, or it's your friend who's volunteering to take the curse away from you in order to get in your pants. Like, I think that's kind of the moral.
Yeah. I don't know if I can agree with that, because I mean, you said a couple things in there that you were like, well, it, you know, she's devalued. She feels devalued by these interactions, and she's not just sleeping around and all of that. I think you're kind of taking away her agency when you make that kind of analysis of she's not making these choices. She has no choice. And I don't like that for any woman, but I don't like that for her. I think she's making multiple choices from the very first one to sleep with Hugh, Jeff, whatever his name is, that are all choices that she is making. And I think to make the trauma about the sex is a little bit problematic versus making the trauma about the threat, you know? And so I think it unintentionally holds virginity in some way to this like pious standard, not a religious pious standard, but you know what I'm saying? Like this holier than thou kind of standard of a woman's virginity is so protected and so important and so valuable. And for many women it is, by the way. I'm not, if that's how you feel about it, you do you, girlfriend. But you're also saying that her sexuality is to be preserved, to be protected, and that it's inherently negative or connotated to be negative for them to spread it around, right? To have sex with a bunch of people, whether it's, you know, because they actually like them or just because they want to have fun. And I think, again, I think that takes away some agency. I think it puts societal preconceived notions on women that they have to treat their sexuality a certain way. I don't think that she, from reading it, like looking at her, I don't think that she is traumatized by the fact that she had sex. Every single time, she seems fine with the activity itself. I think that she's traumatized that she's under threat, right? Like something is threatening her and chasing her and she can't get away from it. And I think one of the other things that informs that for me is that, you know, because again, I watched this and I was like, oh, struggling, did not like it. And I looked up what, you know, the director was saying about why he wrote this movie. And it's an interesting story that he's trying to tell. But I think one of the things that he said was like, I was just trying to tell this story of like, when you're in a nightmare and nothing you can do will solve the nightmare. Nothing you can do can get you out of the nightmare or the dream.
It feels very dreamscapey. I wrote that down. The movie feels dreamscapey. Like, what year is this? What is the weather? Why are these random conversations that don't tie into the film? It's shot very, very spacey, and the music complements it too.
And those things, okay, so to that point, those things are done well, I think. Like where you notice that you don't know what year it is, right? You don't know what the technology is. There's old ass TVs, there's old cars, but then there's this fancy shell phone that clearly is a modern type of device and a e-reader / phone type of thing. And then you have these references to more modern things. You have the style or the dress of the folks in the scene looks more modern. And but also certain things, like certain loops are never closed, right? With much like a dream, you know, you go to the school, or you have this home state, or you have this mom that's very kind of like out of the picture, but there, and like you have these things that are almost in your peripheral, which is very similar to a dream. So I think it effectively does that, where you feel like this is a weird dream, right? And I'm going to come out of it. And that's my problem with it. It never fucking closes the deal on the dream. It never brings you out of it. It never tells you like, oh, I woke up from that. And I'm not even saying wake up as a relief, right? Like, it doesn't have to be like, oh, I woke up and this nightmare is over. It can be waking up into another nightmare. Like, who knows, right? But it never closes the dream loop for somebody who is saying that this is inspired by an anxious dream state and feeling like you can't solve a nightmare when you're in it. And I felt like it just, I felt like it just didn't close that loop. And I think that it made this whole longer metaphor of this spread. And I think, again, it does a good job of showing like, you can't get away from something when you're in a nightmare. It doesn't solve the problem. You can't like seem to escape. And I like that aspect of it, but I just wanted it to do more with that. I felt like nothing happened with that for me.
I think some of the points you're making are fair. I would still disagree. I don't think the movie is saying that all women, their sexuality represents innocence and it's meant to be preserved. I think the movie is saying that this character feels that way, that she has built up this idea of losing her virginity and how important it is to her. And when it happens, it's this terrible event and this outcome and this consequence that takes place. So then every time afterward, when she's sort of not forced, but she's having to make this decision to have sex with somebody else, it's making things worse to her. And we're just seeing her get sort of slowly torn down. But to your point about not closing the loop, I was going to ask you what your biggest complaints were about the movie, because I think most people who don't like this, the number one complaint is like the last 20 minutes, which I totally agree with. I think the pool thing seems silly, I guess, when you think about the fact it's 17-year-olds and they don't really know any better of how to actually fight
it's
this thing. So why not?
And it's silly and it's too drawn out and you see them and you don't see them. And these fucking kids are shooting willy-nilly when they already learned the lesson of not shooting willy-nilly. Like, yeah, I just, that whole scene, like I could have gone without the whole scene. I thought it was not
I think it goes with the logic of most horror films where, you know, we've said this before on the pod, if you watch horror to feel smarter than the characters at times. And when I'm glad that they had the scene where he's shooting willy-nilly and friendly fire, like shoots his friend in the leg, because it's like, okay, this is intentionally showing that this person's a fucking idiot. Not that these are some sort, this is some sort of expert Scooby-Doo plan where they're going to kill this thing. So that thing is weird. I also wanted to point out, I learned the difference between a fetish and a kink. So I think the demon, its fetish is fucking people to death, right? But its kink is throwing large electronic devices at people. So if it can't fuck you to death, it'll do that instead. So that's the difference, folks, between a fetish and a kink.
Don't follow us for more sex tips and jargon.
Based on today's cold open, I feel like they should. Maybe we should change. We should pivot this podcast.
Our new podcast should be sex stories. Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. I just don't. I don't think that scene is well done. I think that those shots are not well done. I mean, sorry, not the shots. I don't think that the scene is well done. The structure of the scene is well done. The shots are really cool. That is one thing I will say about this movie in general, is like he's doing this like wide angle format in the whole film. It's very expansive. You feel like you can see the whole landscape of every situation, which can kind of make it feel more threatening, right? Like you feel like you're looking everywhere for where is the threat coming from, you know, and you spend a lot of time looking at every single frame that way. And so I think that's well done, the way that it is shot. I think the performances are on the whole well done. I think her group is also really commendable. One of
they're
the things
like
that
ride or die friends.
That's what I mean. Like I said that out loud multiple times to Skylar while we were watching this. I was like, she has really good friends and family. These people do not fuck around. Like they are here for you. You can tell also I liked the allusion in that dynamic to your sibling is your wingman, wingwoman, because your home life is at risk in some other way. And so they are there, the one that they rely on, and they're really close as a result. And again, these other kids who are, you know, good friends, neighborhood friends, but also potentially lifelong friends like Paul, are really committed to like, I'm going to drop everything and I'm going to be with you and protect you and support you. And she's the older or oldest perhaps in this dynamic. So I liked the dynamic of that group. Like following that group was not hard for me to follow. They were a sweet group of, like, again, like you said, ride or die community, this like a little community.
Sometimes it's a nice change of pace to have in a horror movie, friends that actually stick together and support, because she doesn't survive the movie if she doesn't have this group of friends.
Right. No, 100%. And that they will, well, they'll risk their lives, obviously, but I just mean they will drop their lives as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to just like leave her to deal with this. They're going to, you know, like, fuck the mom at home. She's fine. Like, we're going to leave this place, our home, and go protect you. And I think it's a conscious choice. And I like that. And I like how, like I said, I like how it's shot.
Creative shots in this. The moving camera with the wheelchair when he's pushing her around at the beginning, and it's sort of in front of her. I don't know how they did that. That one's cool when she drives into the cornfield and we get the car like dash cam.
Okay, but that scene itself is very annoying. The shot is very good, but that scene itself, I was like, but you ran into corn. Like, it's fine. You ran into corn going 12 miles an hour. You did not break an arm. You do not have a bloody head. I was like, this is not a realistic accident. I just don't buy it. It's fucking corn. I think
this, if we ever do merch for the pod, Mackenzie, outside of our $200 koozies, this episode might spur the most catchphrases. Like, bitch, you ran into corn. And so anyway, she's urinating on herself. Like, put that on a t-shirt. Put it on a hat.
Yeah, we drink and we watch things merch coming soon. Bitch, you ran into corn. Okay, you're fine. Yeah, 100%. And I think that that's a real ongoing theme in this, though, really, is these seemingly normal incidents, but in this context become more dramatic. You know? Yeah.
Her friends going with her to the beach and spending time there and, you know, just helping her
but
get through
that. But they're also just chilling.
The other interesting thing, the thing that I love about that, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but fuck, like, they believe her. They have no like, in most horror movies, it's like, you're going crazy. You're seeing things. Like, we're going to put you in an institute. They buy it. They're like, okay, fine. And even before Paul gets fucking yeeted across the beach and they see the hair hang thing, they believe her. I think that's cool. And they've also gone to...
I'm sorry. I'm still like on Paul yeeted somewhere and I'm catching up. Keep going.
I was a middle school teacher. I can't help it. But even when they go with her to Hugh's Jackoff fortress, and I think that's great with like his tissues. My theory is he had that fortress before the demon was even in the picture. He was just like, this is where 100%. I masturbate. Bottles all over the windows.
Come on in. Oh my God. It's true. I do like that they, again, just speak to their loyalty. I mean, I think that's great. But also, did they just believe her because it's a dream? I keep coming back to that too, where I'm like, and not that they shouldn't. I just mean, it's a great add on to the story. And if it is a dream, I think it can be really interesting as well. I'm not even saying that the dream itself as a concept is a problem, or this dream state like we're talking about is a problem. I just, again, I don't think they close the loop on it for me, and it's kind of open-ended, and I want something to happen with it. And even the implication of they're going to do a sequel is like, okay, so it's not, so a, it's dream, not a dream, right? It's not a dream. And I think the concept of this story being a dream is more interesting to me than it being this faux horror or whatever. And I have that with horror a lot. I feel like they're always on the cusp, for me at least, of this really cool concept. Like Hereditary was like that for me, where I was like, this is so much more interesting if it's a psychological thing rather than a paranormal thing. And then they turn it into a paranormal thing. And so like, this is where I'm like, this could have been a psychological, this could have been a mental health issue, this could have been a crazy dream, this could have been a bunch of things that were, to me, again, more interesting than maybe just like this weird paranormal following thing. I don't know. I just, and again, based on what he said about the film, that's also what throws me. If I didn't know that either, maybe that would impact it.
That's, but I can hear that frustration. I think if you watch this and you buy into, not even buy into, but you're noticing all these dreamy components of it, and that's how you're watching the film of, oh, this is going to get resolved. And it turns out it is this sort of nightmare that a young girl is having about her sexuality and the risks of giving that up and what the consequences
might be. Which I can also I just buy that more than the other aspect of like, I'm struggling with this thing. You know what I mean? Like that is a more interesting metaphor to me than this one.
I understand that complaint. I wouldn't argue against that. I can totally see that frustration of like, it ends and you're like, wait, so it wasn't this? I hear you.
But I think also too, if I had gone to some, like, again, I did research after the fact, and like that concept was affirmed in multiple formats, that's why it feels like a gap, right? It feels like this is what you intended to do, but then you didn't do it. That's the thing for me. If it was, I went and found something that was like, no, she's struggling with da 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 da, and it's this whole other metaphor that I just didn't miss or didn't catch or what have you, then maybe I could get on board. But yeah, like my instinct followed the way the film was made is what I'm saying. Yeah. It followed the mindset in which the film was made in theory.
Yeah.
And then they didn't do that. And that's so fair. That's what I think is a struggle for me here. But totally, I do think it's well shot, we're well produced, well performed. I mean, the performances are really solid, I think. And again, the dynamics between the characters are really strong.
That shot of her, I don't love the entire pool sequence. I really don't like the blood filling the pool. I think that's like one of the worst visual effects in it. But I do love the shot of her swimming while her, like, I don't know if you caught that was her dad, the final figure of it, like holding her leg in the pool, that underwater shot of her swimming with the bullets. That looks really fucking cool.
It looks really cool. I agree. Yeah, that the underwater shots are cool for in general in that whole scene. But I agree with you. When the blood starts to spread, which is, you know, another allusion to our cocktail. But when the blood in the pool starts to spread, that's the most fake looking shot of the whole thing. And that's a little weak because it's just so extra, right? Like even if blood is spreading in the water, fine, but it's not going to look like that. And so it just, it looked crazy. And again, adds to the dream state factor. So I was just like, guys, this is a fucking dream, right? Like it's a dream. And then it's not.
That's definitely meant to be sort of another sexuality / hormone related. I would imagine in the director's eyes, like the purpose of that shot is to reflect that. I also had a couple things written down of when she passes it to Greg. Greg doesn't believe. I was, of all the people you could have passed this to, you pass it to the person who doesn't actually believe you. Like,
yeah,
at least Paul does think that you're being chased by a demon, so he understands the consequences if you have sex. Greg doesn't believe her. And afterward,
and he dies for a reason.
Well, her friends say to him, like, oh, have you seen anything? He's like, no. Nah. And then he's like, well, something happened on that beach, just not what she thinks happened. And I'm like, if that is not meant to be a sexual encounter, like two people who had sex misreading a situation and a guy thinking something happened, just not what she thinks happened. Like that, again, that line hit like, oh, that's fucked up. I don't know if you picked up on that.
I think that's a good illusion, but the thing that's happening to her is from a Yara type of figure, and it's not between her and a man at that point. So it's, I get what you're saying, and I think it could have been more powerful, I think, if it was between her and a man of some kind, even if that form had taken Greg, right? Like if it had showed up in the form of Greg rather than Yara, that would have been more of a powerful metaphor of something happened there between us, but it's not what she thinks it is. And but I get you. I think that line is a strong line. I would have just produced it differently for it to really have an impact. But I also think, like, side note, funny note about the red in the pool. We were talking about this yesterday as a little side comment of like, doesn't an STD of some kind, which is of course a theme here, right? Don't you always think of red? Is that why the color is there? Like,
I've had so many, and they're not always red. So.
They're not always red. We went through a bunch of them literally last night. Us and our buddy Zed and like a couple of people, we were like, well, what about this one? What do you think, red? And they were like giving colors to STDs. And I just think red for most of them. So I was like, well, it checks out. If it's supposed to be an STD spreading in the pool, that it's bright fucking red.
And hey, for the record, if you listen, not shaming anybody, STDs, they're part of life. I get people get STDs.
And I think they're like, STIs now. I'm sorry. Because there are STIs and there are STDs as well. But like STIs are very common. Lots of people have them. Yes, we're not judging you. But are they red? Like, I think some of them are red, is what I'm saying.
The last thing that I wanted to say about sort of the tying the whole metaphor thing, her pool seems to be her happy place throughout the film. She's constantly see her. That's sort of the first place we see her. She's sort of just in her own world and smiling. It's that very dreamy sequence. And then by the end, she looks down and the pool is emptied. And I'm just like, so that sort of reflects on her loss of innocence again, I think, in her eyes. I don't think that's actually what's happening, but in her eyes, she thinks it represents that. So.
Yeah, you do see the pool collapse, really, which I think is an interesting shot. And it is such a callback to an earlier shot that you're like, is this supposed to be the same shot? Are we back at the beginning at first when she gets back in the pool later and it's the same swimsuit and it's the same everything? Mm-hmm. So like it makes you rethink and consider that scene. Again, the way that it's shot, the callbacks are really good, and the way it makes you consider other things in the back of the shots and in the widescreen format is really compelling. And again, at the very end, when they are being followed by something, but there's also like another character right there and you're like, well, maybe it's that, but then they're also being followed by this thing. I mean, I personally very much interpret it to be that that thing, they haven't escaped it and that it is following them. And because they move forward with this confidence that they got it, right? Like that they solved it. And they are not looking around. They're not looking backward at all. And I think that's the thing, is like it's sneaking up on them. For the first time, they have their guard down, and now it's, and then it's there, right? Mm-hmm. It's still there. And that's my interpretation of that shot. And I think it's well shot. And I think it's a good opening to apparently a sequel potentially. But yeah, I don't think all the metaphors close the loop. And so I think it's a little bit, I see what they were trying to do in many cases, and I feel like they just didn't quite close the deal.
That's fair. That's totally fair. Like I said, I think incredible concept, original concept. I think the execution's mm-hmm. a little bit off. It feels like two really good ideas smushed together, and it doesn't lean enough into either one. The last thing that I want to ask you before we wrap up here is like, analysis on Paul. Like, how did you as a woman read that character? Because I feel like he's got kind of the nice guy metaphor, like the friend metaphor. But what did you think of him as a character and how he sort of approaches his relationship with Jay?
I think he's a nice guy who thinks he's a nice guy, but is not a nice guy. I mean, it's a very typical, I say very typical for women. Maybe men listening won't understand this, but when you have put yourself in a position in a relationship with a girlfriend of yours and you think, I'm the nice guy and I'm her friend, but I also really like her, but I'm still her friend. But mm-hmm. what you want out of that is not friendship. What you want out of that is something else. And you move that way. You move through the relationship that way with the intent of, I'm sowing the seeds of this other thing. And you know that that's not what she wants. And then at some point you potentially pressure or push that. You are not a nice guy. And that's Paul. Like, you're not a nice guy. That's not what she wants. She's made that clear. If she hasn't enthusiastically let you know that she's not, that she is into you, then she is not in that way, you know? And I mean, not to go too off the rails, but I have had this happen to me many, many times with male friends. A laughable number of times. And by the way, that's not unique, right? Like, that's probably every woman you know mm-hmm. of some guy that they are purely friends with has felt an entitlement to that friendship, to be something different, because they didn't actually ever want it to be a friendship. They wanted it to be something else. And you should have known better. And you should have seen this coming. And how could you? And I deserve this because I've been such a good friend to you. And bitch, you don't deserve anything. I've been exactly who I am this entire time, which is what she was in this movie. And I don't owe you anything. And he is very emblematic of me, of like the nice guy who is not the nice guy and wants a very specific thing from his quote unquote friend. I would get as far away from him as possible if I was her.
He literally said, there's a point where they're having a conversation. I think it's when they're on the couch alone mm-hmm. and he says, I could. And she immediately just goes, no, like we're not. I'm not, this thing's chasing me. I could die. I'm not having sex with you. And then there's another line where he says, I want to help. And she says, do you? She calls it out of like, is that really what you want? Or is it just, you've had this crush on me since we were kids? And that's, I think that's Paul, like that metaphor, I think is the one that does make total fucking sense throughout the film. Maybe everything else doesn't connect, but that it's like, you can track that throughout the entire thing. And by the end, she's succumbed to it, not because she wants to. She doesn't seem happy. It's kind of like a graduate.
That's one of the ones that she's like not having a good time.
Yeah. It's like the end of The Graduate when she leaves the wedding, they're on the bus. Like them walking and holding hands is not a happy shot. I don't think she's as happy as, you know, we were led to think. So, yeah.
No, and I agree with you. I think that's the most consistent throughout of like, you know who Paul and is and is not to her. Yeah. And that is a desperation move at that point. It has nothing to do with him, but he doesn't read it that way. And I think that's important to note, right? Like he finally got what he wanted and now they're a couple, right? Like as far as he's concerned and he doesn't care how it happened. He doesn't care the reasoning for it and that it was this desperation play or whatever it is. Like he doesn't care that she settled. right? Like, it doesn't matter if she's settled for him in some way. It matters that he got her.
I don't know a lot of happy couples who started out by having sex because of a demon chasing them. And then the guy goes and fucks two prostitutes. Like, I don't think any of those couples are still together. So
I don't know. Let's do an Instagram poll and find out. I feel like we can find a couple, right?
So I want to challenge you a little bit today because I want to add potentially something new to the pod. But in addition to our ratings this week, I want to take the tagline for the movie from like the poster and whatnot. And I want you to make it your own. So this will be interesting because I know you didn't really love this one. But for the record, the tagline for this was what?
It doesn't think. It doesn't feel. It doesn't give up.
So I want to ask your rating, but I also want to know what your new tagline for this movie is going to be.
Well, my rating is not great, as we said. So I think like I would give, what, let's see, what did I put in my notes instinctively? Let's just double check. I think I gave, oh yeah, in my notes, I have a 4.5 to a 5. This is one of my, I think, lower ratings. I would say it doesn't make sense. It doesn't work. It doesn't end. It's maybe instinctively what I would say.
Wow, a negative spin, but very clever. Well done.
Thanks. You like it more than me. So like, what's your rating? Would you change the tagline? Do you think it's on the money?
I think talking through it, and I wrote this down. The first thing I wrote was actually on rewatch, this isn't as good as I remember it being the first time. I think this was the third time I saw it. So I don't think it's a perfect movie. I think it does drag a lot in the middle between, I think, the bedroom scene and then when they get attacked at the beach. But
And you're like, why are you just chilling at a beach? Something's haunting you. Anyway.
Yeah. I think it's like, I appreciate it more for the novelty of it. It is a really cool concept. And we'll see what the sequel does, because if the sequel comes out and is bad, it's probably going to affect how I view this movie. Because to your point, if we don't embrace the dreamscape component of it, then some of this doesn't really connect. But I would say my rating for now is probably about an 8. I really like this. I understand the pool scene because it's just dumb teenagers kind of thinking about, well, how could we kill a demon that we know very little about, but they needed a climax. Like, I don't know what, no pun intended there, but they needed a climax to wrap this up. And I don't know what else you could do to fight an invisible demon that only one character can see. So I get why it exists. It's not a perfect script, but I think the metaphors to our discussion today, you can read it multiple ways of what is it actually saying. And I think that the discussion it brings up is kind of interesting. So I'd stick with an 8 for now. And my new poster tagline would be, doesn't matter, had sex.
Oh my God. Okay, Paul.
He's like, I did it. I win.
I fucking win because I got her. That's all that matters.
Or actually, I have an alternate one. We could also put in parentheses, chlamydia, huh? Maybe that would be like a
yikes. Y'all didn't know that this pod is just a vehicle for Lamar to test jokes. Y'all
just puns, y'all only realize. Puns.
It's just puns and jokes. He's like, how do I just test them out? Yeah, and this is just a vehicle for me to be a nerd, so it works out fine. But
yeah, this wasn't based on a book, so you didn't get
it. It wasn't based on a book. Like, yeah, you can tell where I shine, right? I'm here for the book movies. I'm not here to shine at the horror movies. But I did pun a lot today. Actually, I would like a little
you did
credit.
Well.
It was not intentional, but it worked out. But yeah, so I think like this is maybe the furthest apart we've ever been.
Yeah.
On ratings.
So but I mean, I you said during the episode today, and I appreciate you being transparent of like, hey, this is why I don't often connect with horror. Like this, I totally get that. So you call yourself out on it. I think that's fair. There's movies that, you know, genres I don't dig.
But you also, that's what I'm saying. Like your primary genre is almost horror. Yeah. You are a big horror fan. And I think like you don't go outside of the horror genre as much as I do. And I do like, I tend to watch everything. So that's, I think that informs that too, from a trope perspective, from a, film structure perspective too, of just watching things that feel repetitive and what have you. But
my top
just
three genres of films, like number one, horror, number two, movies with Transformers in them. Number three, it's question marks to be determined.
Those are 3,700 Transformer movies. Yeah. They could stop with that. Oh, well, you know, this has been an interesting one for FanJan. I don't remember who recommended it, but there were multiple people I do remember. So, I mean, we did it. We checked the box.
I think at the very least, it was a very interesting discussion, like a good conversation.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting. And I don't anticipate next week being very interesting. come back next week. No, I'm just kidding. Well, like, I'm kidding, but I'm not. We're both not super excited about this one. We next week will be talking about Street Fighter.
I'm excited for the silliness. Movie. I'm not excited for the quality of film, but I'm excited to rip on it a little bit, goof off, have a good time.
We're going to try to do like a little live watch for y'all. I don't know how that's going to pan out.
We'll see.
We're no promises. Yeah. But we're going to try and see if it turns out to be interesting. But I'm going to need a couple shots to get through that one, I think. But anyway, in the meantime...
In the meantime, follow us on our social channels, mainly on Instagram. We have reels, polls, all that good stuff. You can vote for everything. And you can also get video on Spotify now. You can watch video on YouTube and interact with us wherever. You can always email us at wedrinkandwewatchthingspod@gmail.com.
Yeah, and we have a couple like YouTube fans. So I just want to like quick shout out some YouTube fans who have been like commenting, engaging with all of our stuff, and especially those who watched all the classic films, which by the way, there were not many of you who participated in that month, but it's okay. I got like one or two homies out here who were on the YouTubes talking to us about classic films. So thank you for showing up there.
Shout out to these YouTube assholes. That's the reason I have to shower and do my hair before we pod now, because apparently you have to do video podcasting nowadays. I used to just show up looking like shit.
Yeah. I never worn more makeup in my life, guys. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. But for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.
I chugged this one because it was tasty.